You are listening to the FDNY Pearl Podcast, featuring members of the New York City Fire Department. We want to share stories from the field, best practices, lessons learned, and help save lives.
Welcome to this episode of the FDNY Pro Podcast. I'm your host, Battalion Chief Brian Mulry. Happy New Year, everyone. We are kicking off 2024 by sitting down in studio with FDNY Fire Commissioner Laura Cavanaugh to discuss what's been going on around the department and looking forward to the year ahead. Welcome, Commissioner.
Thanks for having me.
All right, we appreciate you coming down. Winter's typically a busy time for us here in FDNY. The fire duty increases, including those fires caused by lithium-ion batteries. The past 2 years, lithium-ion batteries have skyrocketed in New York City. We've had approximately 500 battery fires in which 24 citizens lost their lives. You recently traveled to Washington, D.C. to meet with lawmakers to push for a national safety standard. Why do you think this needs a national solution and not just a local municipal one?
Our trip to D.C. was advocating on a piece of legislation that would ban non-UL batteries from entering the U.S. And I think the question is, like, why is that so important? Why do this at the federal level? And for us, there's two things. One, I think it's really important to note, we instituted a lot of new legislation last year, a lot of new inspections and enforcement, and we did a lot of education. And at the end of the year, we went back and looked at the data and said, where are the fires still happening and with what devices? And what we found was, even though non-UL batteries are banned in the city of New York, they're still getting here. Even though we've enforced in every bike shop in the city, we're still finding illegal bike shops pop up or even people now doing it in their residences. And we've done all of this education. We've seen it make a difference, except for in certain pockets. And those pockets are that we are now seeing nearly every single fatal lithium-ion battery fire is happening in a residence. And it's happening with a battery that wasn't certified or allowed to be there anyways, and it's in a space we can't inspect. So that tells us that, you know, in addition to continuing those really aggressive methods around finding those batteries, finding the bike shops that aren't doing this correctly, educating the public, we have to stop those batteries from getting in here. And we find that that's incredibly difficult when you say it's banned from the city of New York, but you can go to New Jersey or to Nassau or to anywhere else, and frankly,
or have it delivered.
I was just saying, a lot of the online websites still deliver them, even though we've sent them letters and they have taken some stuff down, but it's a bit of like whack-a-mole. A new seller comes on to Amazon and starts selling them, and then we have to send a letter saying these aren't allowed. And so we think it's critically important that these are banned at a federal level. One thing that that does, you know, the question is, well, if we can't stop it, can the feds? But when something is banned at the federal level, it means it can't make it into the ports. It means that inspections for those batteries when they come into the country are much heftier, more time-consuming. And so not only do we think that if they never make it in, they're very unlikely to be sold, but we've also just been told that people are making these because they're cheap and easy to sell. If they're not cheap and easy to sell, they'll move on to something else. So we think that's really important. We got some phenomenal movement. It moved through a committee, and we also got bipartisan support in both the House and the Senate, people signing on from both parties, from both houses in Congress. So we made a lot of progress, but what we left them with was time is of the essence. It's not enough to support it. We need to move it quickly because people already have these batteries, and every day that goes by, they can buy them. And they can get them here, and then they're sitting in their houses, and it's essentially like having a ticking time bomb in your house. So for us, it's what we really reinforced was this has to happen quickly. It can't happen in the next session of Congress. It can't happen years from now. It has to happen now. And I think they heard us.
And what do you anticipate? What's the best case scenario?
So best case scenario is they pass this soon before the legislators, you know, this is an election year, and what that means is legislators leave D.C. earlier. So by June, they're kind of off to their various districts to campaign. So we're hoping that this passes before June. And then that would mean it can begin to be promulgated in terms of the rules. It will be UL certification, so UL will play a huge role in defining what a certified battery is. And then they will start stopping these at the ports before they come in.
I can't imagine how impossible it is to stop the tide coming in. With each passing day, there are more of them on the market and in residences here in the city.
It's one of the hardest things. Even once we've done all of this enforcement and passed all these laws, there's just such an incentive for people to make these. They're getting money for it. There's some sort of underground market that's been created by the app companies for these off-market batteries. And so that makes it really hard to combat. I will say we're not just focusing on the federal level. We think that's the ultimate piece that we need, but we're doing city, state, and federal concurrently. So we're actually introducing a new package of bills to the city council that would amend some of what we passed last year with what we saw worked and didn't, and would give us additional enforcement tools that we think we need. The governor put a package of bills when she did her state of the state and put forward her budget that mimic the cities. And that's really helpful because same reason as we want the feds to ban them. If they're banned from the state, it gets that much harder to get them into the city. So we're doing a city, state, and federal approach. But until they stop exploding, frankly, we have to keep going. And I think that's the most important thing to note is that like they're in people's homes already. And often I find we go out and talk to people, sometimes they're saying, I know this is dangerous, but I have to have this bike to make a living. And so I think we also have to get at the app companies who are creating this and really sort of force them to make sure that their workers can have safe equipment.
Yeah, so many fires I could think of, a few of off the top of my head. They started in a business at the bottom of a building.
Yeah.
We talked about this on the podcast previously. We had a Lieutenant John Cassidy from Hazmat. He's an expert on this sort of thing. Because I don't know what they're experiencing around in the country, but we're really experiencing it. Mm-hmm. He had a term that stuck with me. He called it a last mile solution. I thought that was so smart because it's so true. And it's probably why we're experiencing it so often. New York City, they make such sense.
Yeah, New York has a perfect storm of things that make these bikes appealing to people. It is a last mile city. People don't drive at the same rates they do. The city's really dense, so also people don't have a space to put these outside like they do in other parts of the country. And then that delivery demand. New Yorkers expect things to arrive now in 15 minutes or less, or they don't want to pay for it. So that has created a perfect storm. But I would say to answer your question about is it happening in the rest of the country, it is actually. We're experiencing the worst of it, certainly. We are so often the tip of the spear. We were here. COVID hit us early, so this delivery market hit us early. I mean, also, frankly, we do so much, as you know, aggressive interior firefighting. So we're also facing these dangers in a way that not every municipality does. A lot of our other urban counterparts are seeing it, but some of the more rural areas are experiencing it as well. And one of the things we did in Washington, D.C. is make sure that they understand that, because one thing we've noticed is we have a phenomenal group of fire marshals and the Bureau of Fire Prevention that does all of the inspections. A lot of other places in the country don't have either, or they have a fire marshal. So letting them know that they're seeing these fires, it's just not being tracked in the same way. There was not a single member we met with that we did not have a list of a fire or fires caused by lithium-ion batteries in their district. So it is happening elsewhere. Part of the reason we think we need to lead on this is it's happened here first. And as is so often true with FDNY, because we're the largest fire department, we lead the way. We don't want to wait till it gets really bad somewhere else. We want to say now, we've seen this. We've seen how bad it is when you arrive at one of these fires, as you mentioned, and we need to do something about it now. Other thing I'd say, too, which you and I have talked about, is the cancer risk. So it's not just the amount of fire upon arrival or even a fire that could erupt behind you if a bike is in an occupancy. It's also the risk of the fumes. And so luckily we've gotten some federal funding to look at that. And so we've started looking at what is actually in these batteries, what is actually in people's blood after them, and trying to get an understanding of how we can make sure also that we're advocating for firefighter safety and cancer reduction.
We are lucky to have those resources. You talk about the fire marshals. I'll throw Hazmat in there, Hazmat Operations. They are really being put to the test. And when you look at it from that perspective, that you're leading the way and hopefully make some changes that are really going to affect people's lives.
Yeah, we hope so.
I know part of your D.C. trip, you spoke at the U.S. Conference of Mayors in the UL Battery Forum. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. We were sitting on a panel talking about this, and a couple reasons we think that's so important. One, it really is saying to the other cities in the U.S., this is a problem in your city. It's only going to get worse. And we want you to band with us to do something about it, especially because time is of the essence. Every person that we can help push towards getting to a solution faster is helpful for actually getting this legislation through Congress. We also wanted to talk about the UL role in this, and particularly how important this is, I would say, for having a seat at the table for public safety for all new technology. And that was one of the things I really tried to enforce, that, you know, e-bikes is a model for something that could happen with almost anything, which is as technology develops faster, as companies overseas are able to kind of swing between producing one cheap consumer good to producing another cheap consumer good, we have to keep in mind that there's only one group of people that have to arrive no matter if that technology is legal or not, no matter if it's been well vetted, and that's us, right? So you get a 911 call and you're there in 90 seconds, you are left to deal with whatever is there, and it doesn't matter whether or not somebody certified it along the way. So what we really called for was that these technology companies have to have us at the table when they're developing them, because we can say, here's a danger you're not thinking of. Have you ever thought of what will happen if this fails or it explodes? Have you ever thought about the toxicity of the product when it burns, which is actually true of a bunch of new materials, as you know. It's why cancer rates have gone up, is what is in our homes is burning faster and is more toxic. So talking to them, taking e-bikes as the current problem, but also saying these new technologies are going to keep popping up, whether it's drones delivering our packages, flying cars, which is no longer like something from the Jetsons, is something that people are actually developing. We need to understand and have a seat at the table on the front end. Actually, a great thing we learned about there, and even though we don't have them here yet, this was very important for us to learn, and to me really reinforces why we should have a coalition and be at the table, is in the cities where they have autonomous cars, where they're self-driving cars, they're having an issue of them driving into emergency scenes because they hadn't taught them to recognize lights and tape. So some of these cities have seen these cars drive or like park right in front of the building that they're trying to enter into. And so we started a conversation with our other big city fire departments around that and around making sure that the companies making those cars have us at the table and are starting to solve for that problem that they don't recognize the lights on a fire truck or an ambulance.
I know FDNY is releasing its strategic plan for 2024 through 2026 this year. It's been a while since one was released. We know you like forward planning. Talk about the importance of having a strategic plan and what's within that plan.
Yeah, I think it's helpful to understand, like, why do these documents matter, right? But also, I don't know that people always see how we use it. So the main way that we use it is that in the city of New York, you always have limited resources. You're competing with the private sector. You're competing with your fellow agencies for limited time, money, and resources, whether that's around the budget, which is usually our primary place that we're advocating, but also around whether it's legislation or even just attention to an issue that matters to us. We are always in a mode of having to advocate for the department over all these other stakeholders who are also advocating for themselves. And there's no better way to do that than to have one playbook that you're all playing off of. And that's really what a strategic plan is. It's meant, A, to be broad so that you can incorporate things into it. It's a flexible document, but it's also meant to say, here are the department's goals, here's why we have those goals, and here are some of the things that are going to go along with that. Here are some of the programs we want to get off the ground to support those goals. And so really, if you have a strategic plan and you use it right, it just becomes a playbook. No matter the meeting, no matter the press conference, no matter how you're talking to OMB, and whether it's you or me or another member of the staff, everybody is playing off the same playbook. We're all saying, these are the things that are the most important, here's why they're important, and here's what we get to achieving them. So we think, you know, it's be the first time, I think, in 10 years, over 10 years, that we've had one, that it will be really helpful, especially as we know we have a really poor budget climate, bad fiscal outlook at the moment. Hopefully that gets better. But anytime we start tightening our belt in the city, it's even more important that we pick one or two very critical things and we bang the drum consistently to say that even in tough times, these are the things the department needs to meet its mission now and in the future.
You bring up the budgetary constraints we're facing now. I know the mayor just had his State of the City address. Explain to us, what does it mean for the fire department?
Yeah, a State of the City address is sort of similar to a strategic plan. It tells us where the mayor is focused over the next year. And that's helpful because if you're going to develop a playbook, you want to understand from your boss, where is he going, so that we can make sure we're going in the same direction and that the things we want to get done fold into that. And also with a public safety agency, there's also some times that what we're proposing, you know, we're going to be on the other end of. If it's going to change the nature of the city's infrastructure, if it's going to change the way the streets look or the way apartments look or way housing is constructed, we're also a part of all of that. So we look at the state of the city and we say, which parts of this can we fold our agenda into and be part of the mayor's agenda? And which parts of this do we have to be ready for? Which things are going to make a change that operationally is going to affect us? So in this state of the city, there were a couple of things to that end. There is a huge housing piece to the state of the city this year. And so we'll want to be in conversations around, one, any new development, we also want to see them consider a firehouse or an EMS station or both. So knowing where they're targeting new development is really important for us. Knowing where they're converting housing, so obviously for any fire company or any EMS station, knowing which people are going to be living where and doing what. Are they doing business? Are they living there? Are they shopping? Are they dining out? And there's a lot of rezonings in this plan that we'll want to account for. Same thing with the streetscape, like changes to the roadways and the streets affect us so much. So those are all things that we looked through the state of the city and said, here's how we're going to prepare to meet that mission. And then the other part is there's one piece that affects us directly, which is they are looking at starting a new agency that will govern all e-bikes and alternative modes of transportation. And as you have mentioned before, that last mile question is a really big one in New York City. All these companies are diving into that space and saying, you know, we're going to develop a cargo bike, we're going to develop a robot that drops off packages, we're going to use e-bikes more. In a lot of cases, they're switching from e-bikes to mopeds because of the dangers we've raised, but mopeds raise other dangers. So they're actually looking at creating an agency to oversee all of that. That's something that we would be extremely supportive of because it would mean licensing. So it would mean not only would we start to know where these bikes are coming from, which is one of the most difficult parts of enforcement around e-bikes, is they're nearly impossible to track. So we'd start to know where they came from. It would also mean that the delivery companies who are putting these things in the market now have to be held for account. We would know this number of people driving e-bikes drive for these companies. And we can also ask those companies to make sure that their equipment is safer. So we're going to have a key seat at the table on that, and we're very excited about the possibility of it. It means not only can we get our arms around the e-bike problem, it also hopefully means that the next technology, you know, the robot delivering packages, if it also has issues or catches fire, we can know that now, and it can be part of regulating and allowing them to operate in the city, is they have to be safe before they can do that.
Yeah, that's interesting. Recently, we had some funding restored, and we've touched on the budget, but maybe you could explain, just explain what happened there and what that means to us.
Yeah, so we're in really tough fiscal times. We had to take some very difficult cuts. Luckily for us, they did not have to be to our frontline resources. And also luckily for us, we're not facing anything like layoffs or firehouse closures. But they were still difficult cuts. You know, they're in the back end, but the back end of our department supports the frontline work. So things like mechanics and software engineers, those things do slow down what we're able to get to the front line. So luckily, though, we have a mayor who was a first responder who understands our needs. And so when the fiscal picture looked a little bit better, he restored two things. He restored some of those lines that we had cut, and then he also restored the fifth firefighter to the 20 companies that it's contractually allowed for. So we're very grateful for that. We also got an exemption from cuts in this latest round of the budget. So has it been tough? Yes. Are we doing better than our fellow agencies? Also yes. And, you know, we just have to keep going. The budget is kind of the biggest part of our days because until the fiscal picture looks rosy, which it's going to be a while, we know that cuts are always potentially on the table. If it gets worse for the city, even if we're given exemptions, eventually cuts will come to us too. And we still have cuts that we did make that are making things a little more difficult to get certain new projects out the door. So we're going to continue to lobby, but right now things are looking stable for the fire department, and we're very grateful for that.
All right, within this strategic plan, there are four pillars. It's workforce, tech, foster internal resilience, and foster external resilience. Maybe give us a high-level overview.
Really, the reason we broke it down into those four categories, they all roll up into one thing, which will be very familiar to our members, which is our mission stays the same. Our mission is still to protect life and property. It was 150 years ago, and it is now. What has changed is the city we work in, the environment we work in, and also the technology that's available to us to meet some of those challenges. So bringing it down into those four categories for us was to figure out which pieces of this safety puzzle can we look at differently and resource differently, and which ones do we have to, frankly. So workforce development, developing our people, our greatest asset, I think that one is obvious. Fostering internal and external resilience, I would say that the FDNY is the most resilient organization I've ever come across. But this city has been through an enormous sea change and is still going through it. And so whether it's about meeting new traffic patterns in the city, new housing stock, whether it's about the mental health crisis that we're confronting, both our own members from going through the pandemic and everything they see every day, but also the patients that are coming to us that are more patients than EMS has ever seen, with more complicated mental health issues. Those things all roll up ultimately into how do we continue to do our job as safely as we can for our members to be safe when they're at work, but also how do we continue to keep citizens safe as these things are changing, as workload shifts to these medical emergencies and often really complicated technical rescue as our buildings keep changing and modernizing. And then how do you use technology in a way that makes sense for our frontline responders? So how do we make sure things like drones and robots are not only part of the response package and can actually help an incident commander make decisions that are best for the members and for New Yorkers. So, I mean, I think the collapse in the Bronx is a great example of being able to put the drone up and not only being able to make a decision with a little more information of is there anybody in there, but also do I want to send my member in? You know, what does it look like in there? How stable is it? What does it look like from every angle? So I don't think that people will see us have a different mission. I think that the strategic plan is just talking about what is changing in the city and what are the new techniques. And frankly, we have already drawn a lot of ideas from the field and are going to continue to draw more. What are the things we need, resources, tools, training to meet that?
So many moving parts.
Yeah. Yeah, the city is ever changing. And that's, I think, is our greatest challenge, right? We do our jobs well. The challenge is that, like, the city just keeps changing. There's always a new type of emergency layered on top of the emergencies we're already responding to.
And have always responded to.
Yeah.
One of the biggest projects going on now in the FDNY that is really going to affect our rank and file is the SCBA project, where we're due for a new SCBA. Is it a 20-year process or?
Yeah, I mean, it's been a very long time since we've purchased one, more than 15 years at this point. NFPA is going to be moving to a 10-year cycle. So we are making what I consider to be both the largest purchase for the single most important piece of equipment that our members use in the field. And not only is that alone make it of utmost importance, but also technology has changed massively since we last bought one. And so we have to consider all the different technologies.
Considering how long we're going to have it.
Yeah, exactly. We're sort of having to anticipate the future. And that's what's so hard about procuring things in city government is it takes, especially when you're our size, it takes us so long to not just procure it, but we have to train folks, we have to roll it out, and we have to make sure that we're getting everything we can anticipating some of the challenges of the next 10 years. So it's exciting. There's a lot of new technology available, things like Z-axis to know where vertically. So the Z-axis is understanding where vertically a member is in a building.
So if you get a Mayday, you pick it up on your iPad, the Z-axis would tell you potentially
that it was the 10th floor, potentially. That's one piece of technology that's still, you know, in development, but that we've specifically asked for. Bluetooth technology to make communications much clearer, which I think any member can speak to why that would be such an advantage. The other piece of Bluetooth is it also shares data. So it also gives the incident commander the ability to potentially know who's low on their air, who's having some other sort of issue, whether it's a heart rate going up, that they may want to pull that person out faster. So it presents a lot of opportunity for us. The tricky part with technology is always, does it work 95% of the time in the conditions that our members work in? So people can promise a lot on the technology side, but it's really put to the members in R&D and then ultimately to training and safety and everybody who helps not only test out the models that come forward, but, you know, roll out whatever version we go with to figure out, does this technology do what it says it will do? Does it do it consistently? Can it do it on the 20th floor? Can it do it five stories below? Can it do it in conditions that are unpredictable? So we have a really great group looking at, like, what are all of the technologies being put forward? But we've also said to the companies, here are some things we want. So it's not enough to just say, to sort of just give us what's minimally available. Like, we're the FDNY, right? And we lead the way. And what we buy, you know, we're going to be the biggest procurement any company gets. So we try to use that leverage to say, like, there's also some things we want to see. And we put it back to the companies to see if they will come up with meeting our needs.
Yeah, we have, over the course of the years, we've developed so many technologies, right? We have pass alarms, and then we have pack trackers that can pick up and tell you which pass alarm's going off. And the radio has specific a Mayday button. But again, we have the opportunity to tie a lot of these things in, because a lot of incident commanders are going to be standing in front of the building these days with an iPad, in addition to what they always have, a small clipboard or something like that, again, for the redundancy part. I just think it's such a great opportunity not to be missed.
Yeah.
Technology is in leaps and bounds in the last 15 years, and we're going to be buying a mask that's going to serve us for the next 15.
Yeah.
If there was one thing you were going to do to make our members safer, it's to help make the masks easier to use for a longer period of time.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. You know, I think that's what we want to make sure we take advantage of. You know, how do we make sure that this information can actually be shared, critical information about how the members in the building are doing? But I'd also say it's also where we have to be really careful, because let's say I said yes to 100 data points being sent to the incident commander, right? Then you have a data overload problem, right? And I mean, that's why we're so lucky that our members are so multi-talented. We have this incredible group of members from lieutenants through chiefs working just on this. Like, this is their project, and that's the kind of thing that they're really being incredibly helpful. A company will promise something, they're going to go and actually see the mask, see what it does compared to what it says it will do, and also, like, how does it actually act in real life fire conditions, and what is actually workable, like what makes sense on a fire ground, what is going to be the features of the mask that actually save a life. And what's actually useful. Sometimes they promise us a lot, and then, as we've seen so often, sometimes it's something that's not even used. Or even with the pass alarms, where now you hear that noise so often that people aren't paying attention to it as often, right? And so you have to find this perfect balance between new technology that adds safety and not getting lost in just the excitement of new technology that might never get used. It's so important. It's going to take so much time and effort to get it right. And they're going to be relying on a lot of members in the field to test it out and give them feedback.
Well, I'm confident they are going to get it right. I've heard about them, and you do seem to have some really bright people working on it.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to seeing the end product. All right, well, if you walked into a firehouse today, obviously one of your first questions would be about the lieutenant's test. And for our outside listeners, what I'm saying is we gave a lieutenant's promotional exam recently, and now we're eagerly awaiting the results. Maybe give us a quick update.
Yeah, you know, I think for our members here, they know what we're talking about. But for outside listeners, why does this matter? You know, this is about career trajectory for our members, which, as I say over and over, our greatest asset. So we've been going through a lot of efforts to make sure that our members know what promotional opportunities are available to them and how can we transparently share them across the agency and help people get where they want to go in their career. So for outside listeners, the lieutenant's exam is part of that larger project. For our members, they know that we have a disagreement about the way the exam was scored. I think they know that we are taking our case to DCAS, and luckily we've got a lot of great help from our attorneys to our analytics folks to our uniform members who are helping us look backwards to make a case around how these exams have been given. We've made a really compelling case, and we're hoping that it wins the day.
All right. Well, that's great to hear. Commissioner, we appreciate you coming down. This has been a great visit. We wish you well in the coming year.
Thanks. Anytime.
All right. Thanks for listening to this edition of the FDNY Pro Podcast. I'm your host, Battalion Chief Brian Mulry. For more training and information from our subject matter experts, go to fdnypro.org.
FDNY Pro is online at fdnypro.org. Subscribe today and get inside access to the FDNY. Learn more about our publications, professional conferences, and other tools for first responders. Train with New York's bravest.
Hi, everyone. I'm Captain Randy Lee.
And I'm Captain Andrew Brown, and we co-host the Join FDNY podcast.
Follow us to listen or watch the Join FDNY podcast for insights into careers with the department, tips for candidates, and stories from FDNY members who've gotten on the job and love what they do.
You know what I like most about this FDNY podcast, Randy?
What's that?
The amount of information and the individuals that we speak with that share the other opportunities within the FDNY.
Expanding outside of being an EMT, paramedic, or firefighter, it's like a sneak peek behind the curtains where most people don't get to see.
So join us at the Join FDNY podcast. Come check us out.